What's up, everybody? It's your boy George Conley from Full Press Commanders. I'm here talking about this big NFC East matchup on Sunday Night Football. Let's get it on. What's up, everybody? Thank you for spending this lovely Wednesday afternoon with us here today. I'm joined by Andy Makowitz of the One Giant Podcast to get his insight on this big NFC East matchup on Sunday. How you doing today, Andy?
George, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to talk to you about this. What a game we have coming up on Sunday, right?
It's pretty much a playoff game, right? It's crazy. So I'm really pumped about it. So yeah, let's jump right into it, man, Andy. So New York, Washington, we just played each other about a week ago or 2 weeks ago now. It's going to be an epic, large game on Sunday Night Football. I'm going to be in attendance. It's going to be super cold, maybe some poor weather around here. What's the narrative coming out of New York? You guys had a pretty tough game against the Eagles last week. What's going on right now?
Yeah, so obviously it wasn't very good against the Philadelphia Eagles for the Giants at home last week. The Philadelphia Eagles ran all over the Giants. They had time of possession. The game was never in doubt. While it feels all doom and gloom when you lose a division game as badly as they did, it felt like the coaching staff and the team was kind of half in, half out on really putting that effort against Philadelphia, knowing that the Commanders were coming up the following week. And even the media and some of the reporters, all the questions were geared towards, are you prepared for this week? Are you looking forward to the Commanders? What's happening? It almost felt like it was a throwaway game. In a game where they knew it was going to be tough to win with a lot of injuries. So I think everyone kind of just, you know, threw that one over their shoulder after the game was over and said, now it's time to focus on the Commanders because this is the biggest game of the season for both teams.
I kind of caught that as well because I know, like, going into the game, there were some questions about whether they should start some certain players, like, you know, bench the players to rest, kind of put things on the back burner there. Do you think that was a smart strategy? Do you think should they get given their best effort to Philadelphia? What do you think?
Well, so that was a big question between me and my co-host Adam Armbrecht on One Giant Podcast. We went back and forth before the game where, you know, Saquon Barkley had a little bit of a neck injury. The question was, do you play him? Do you not? He ends up starting, but only plays about a third of the snaps, partially because the game got out of hand. But the second series was already our third string running back, Gary Brightwell, getting carries. To that point we said earlier, it felt like even the coaching staff was half in on the game. Like, do we really go for this? Do we feature Saquon? Do we give him 20 to 25 carries and try to make this a real game? It just felt like the game got away from him. It was a really tough thing. Thank goodness a lot of the players ended up going through that game unscathed and will be a little bit healthier than we have been in previous weeks.
Gotcha. Exactly. So we keep harping on it over and over again. Obviously, it's a really big matchup coming up on Sunday. The NFC is a tight race right now. So as we can see right now, Washington sitting at 7-5-1. The New York Giants are sitting there at 7-5-1 as well. Due to division tiebreakers, New York has fell to the fourth spot while Washington moved up during their bye week. Andy, you know, I think it's been a tale of two teams, I guess, for New York as over the course of the year. What do you attest to that? Why did the Giants start off so hot at the beginning of the year? And what's going on right now where they're kind of struggling a little bit?
Yeah, it feels like over the last five or six games, things have kind of taken a turn for the Giants. Early on in the season, the Giants were getting those lucky bounces to go their way. In those close one-possession games, Brian Daboll was showing his chops as a brand-new head coach, being able to pull all the right strings. You know, think back even to game one. The Giants are trailing on the road to the Tennessee Titans, score in the last few seconds of the game, and instead of kicking the extra point, Brian Daboll says, let's go for two and try to win this game outright. It's decisions like that early on in the season where execution was going well, even against teams like the Packers and the Ravens when they came up with come from behind wins. Everything seemed to be clicking right. Obviously, the Giants have been debilitated by injuries. We've lost most of our wide receivers. We've lost most of our secondary and some of our linebacking core. You know, it's a lot. You know, coaching can only overcome so much when you don't have the talent on the field. It feels like those injuries have really hamstrung, you know, pun intended, the team's ability to do anything on the offensive and defensive side of the ball.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So obviously, the New York Giants have kind of had a tough little stretch right here. I'm looking at over the last six games, four losses, one win, and one tie against Washington. So what do they do to turn it around, Andy? What do they need to do to kind of bounce back? What are you thinking?
Well, one, they have to get healthy. What we've seen is Leonard Williams on the defensive line for the New York Giants is an absolute monster when he is out there. And you can see that the team is completely different on defense when he's available. In fact, you know, the defense run defense for the Giants is about middle of the road, even a little bit higher than that when Leonard Williams is out there and available. When he is not there, they are the worst defensive team against the run in the entire league. So it just really shows how important he is to be able to get that defense off the field and give the offense more opportunities. So, you know, really it's health. Obviously, we've had 3 weeks without our best cornerback in Adoree Jackson, who inexplicably got hurt returning punts. We had Xavier McKinney, our best safety, who got injured in an ATV accident. It just feels like the Giants can't get everyone healthy at the same time to be able to understand what this team actually looks like when healthy.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely a big one. Obviously, from a Washington fan from afar, Leonard Williams is definitely a threat at Adoree Jackson as well. What's their status for this week? What's the latest that you're hearing?
Yeah, so Adoree Jackson has already been basically ruled out by Brian Daboll. He said he won't be ready to go. This Sunday will actually be 4 weeks from the injury, and they said it was going to be a 4 to 6 week time frame. So it's unfortunate for Giant fans that Adoree still won't be able to be out there. The good news for Giant fans in this game is that Leonard Williams was a limited participant today in practice. Obviously, that's very encouraging, knowing that he was basically doubtful and didn't get much reps in last week. They're kind of signaling that they think this is going to be the game that he's going to be back. And I think if it's close, he's probably going to try to push to play, knowing how important this game is for both the Giants and the Commanders.
And what's the injury, Andy? I missed it. So is it like a hamstring injury, lower body injury?
He had a neck injury.
Neck injury. Okay, cool. And the structural damage or more like muscular or what is it?
Yeah, they've been very coy with exactly what it is for Leonard Williams. But obviously being on the defensive front, lowering your head and having those collisions the whole time, the neck is probably pretty important when it comes to trying to stop the run. So they've been playing it very close to the chest here, hoping to see him back out there so the Giants can be a little bit more competitive in the run game.
Gotcha. It makes a lot of sense there. Very good. So before we get into like the actual like logistics and fine points of our game, let's kind of look at the big picture, right? So I'm going to pull up a graphic about the NFC. We're kind of see where we stand right now. So if the playoffs ended today, Washington would be the sixth seed and the Giants would be the seventh seed. I just kind of want to get your perspective on the whole NFC picture as a whole. How do you feel like the Giants stand relative to their peers? Do you think that are you threatened by the Seahawks and the Lions and the Commanders? Like, where do you feel like, let's start off with the tail end of the wild card picture, right? So in regard to getting into the playoffs, what's your confidence level in regard to that?
Well, that's a tough one, George. You know, things have been trending in the wrong direction for the Giants. Obviously, this is a huge game, a must-win game for the Giants on the road in division. They're, you know, Vegas and betting sites have them as a 4-point underdog. So they, you know, have a tough hill to climb here. And this game is so important for their chances to be able to make it. You know, when you look at the odds to make it in this game, if the Giants end up winning this game, their chance to make the playoffs go up to 90%. If they lose, it goes down to 31%, which is such a difficult situation for the Giants to be in. You know, you mentioned how we stack up with the rest of the NFC. Obviously, we've lost two games to the Dallas Cowboys already. We just came off a double-digit loss to the Philadelphia Eagles that wasn't very competitive. Already, we've lost three games to two of the playoff teams. We've obviously tied Washington a few weeks back, which is encouraging. The Giants have an opportunity coming up against the Vikings and against the Eagles in Week 18 to, you know, show a little bit more against those NFC playoff type teams.
I agree. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting, right? I'm kind of, in my perspective, I think like going 2-for-2 between both of our teams, right? Either 2-for-2 is the floor for the amount of wins that we could get to get into the playoffs, you know, potentially 3-1. Do you see that as potentially achievable? Like, I know the Eagles game is probably, I was probably chucked up as a win, right? They're probably going to be benching their starters at that point. How confident are you in the Vikings game and the Colts game and even the Commanders game?
So George, I'm sure you do the same thing that we do over at One Giant Podcast, where you look at it and you're like, who's going to be playing who? What week is it going to be? Are they going to be locked in? And something that we discussed on our show was, yes, it seems like the Eagles will probably have things wrapped up because they have a 2-game lead over the Cowboys right now, and they have the tiebreaker against the Minnesota Vikings as well. So it feels like they probably will have it wrapped up. There's two things that come to mind. One is that Dallas will likely have the top wild card spot already locked up on their end. And oh, wouldn't you know it, the Commanders end up playing the Dallas Cowboys at that point. So the Eagles and the Cowboys both might not have anything to play for. So that's why it becomes critical, you know, this matchup, knowing that that's not, you know, an advantage for either of these teams. I think, you know, the challenge for us is obviously the Colts. You don't really know what you're going to get. They've been struggling recently. But even the Minnesota Vikings, everyone kind of says they have been on the side of fortune this year in one possession games, whereas last year they kind of, every single one possession game, it felt like they couldn't get out of their own way. So the tough part for me is I see a path to two wins, but it feels almost because of the tiebreakers and because of the schedule that the winner of this game would probably have, you know, the loser of this game would probably have to win out their last three games in order to make the playoffs, which I don't see the Giants being able to do.
Yeah, and truth be told, you know, I'll give it honest back and forth as well. This game is going to be very paramount, right? So looking at Washington's schedule, I do think this game is going to be, you know, imperative. We have to win this game. It's going to be a 40% swing, as you mentioned. Same thing for us, right? I believe it's 86% if we win to get into the playoffs. If we did not, it drops down to 28% or something in that regard. I'm not confident in the 49ers game, as you can already see on the, you know, according to PFF. The Giants are already 6.5-point favorites already going into that game, which is going to be, and that's with Brock Purdy as well. So that's going to be very interesting. Yeah, they're a stacked team. They're actually catching, you know, catching fire at the right time. The Browns, you have no idea what we're going to get. Very similar to the Colts, kind of a dice roll right there. And then the Cowboys, we'll see how they actually end up in regard to benching their starters.
Yeah, George, you know, I was going to ask you a question in terms of how, you know, the Giants and the Commanders feel like they're going in two different directions. Obviously, since the change to Taylor Heinicke at quarterback, maybe it's not just all about him. But since that moment, it feels like Washington has gained some momentum. How are you feeling going into the end of the season, knowing that, you know, you've won, I believe it's 6 or 7 games. The team's probably feeling pretty good. And this is a huge game that you're, you know, in division at home that you're favored in, right?
Yeah, so we're feeling pretty good. We're feeling confident, but at the same time, we have like a very like a razor thin margin of error, right? I feel like the Giants and the Commanders kind of have a similar mindset of how they want to construct their team. And you tell me if I'm wrong, right? So Washington wants to control the clock. They want to run the ball. They want to use Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson to kind of you know, control time of possession. They want Taylor Heinicke to manage the ball, manage the, you know, be a game manager, distribute the ball, and have yards after catch, and rely on our defense to kind of carry the way. We are confident in regard to our defense have been performing very well. But the problem is, if you look at our scores, Andy, very, very razor thin, right? 20-20, 19-13, 23-10 against the Texans, which was, you know, in theory, a big explosive, you know, differentiator. The Eagles game, 32-21, that looks larger than it was, because if you watch that game on Monday Night Football, it actually was a fumble at the last play, you know, on a pitch, you know, trying to Hail Mary kind of play to kind of score a touchdown. We score a touchdown at the end to kind of make the lead seem larger. So has there been razor edge wins in regard to Washington? So we are confident. We think Heinicke can, he has this like charisma, this moxie. We really do kind of talk about that here, like Heinicke magic, where if we are close within 3 or 4 points, we do believe he can kind of, he has a, you know, ice in his veins. He'll bring us down the field and score in that last little point right there. But you know, the talk of the town in DC is like, you know, now that Carson Wentz is healthy, do we put him back into the game? Which is definitely very interesting, because, you know, we think he has a higher upside with the, you know, his arms talent, you know, but the thing is, Wentz has no mobility anymore. I'm sure you know that as a Giants fan as well. He can't scramble. Our offensive line is very weak, and that our offensive line is very susceptible to pass blocking, very similar to the Giants, right? So we basically need Heinicke to kind of scramble and kind of throw with anticipation. So there is confidence, but just to give you a big picture, I think, you know, I'm feeling confident about the Giants game, not 100% confident, but I think we can probably pull it out, maybe, right? 49ers, I see that as potentially a loss. I see the Browns game as more of a coin flip, and then the Cowboys, who knows, man? So Cowboys, we lost Cooper Rush earlier in the year, so we can't have arrogance going into that game. And as a Giants fan, you know, in 2016, you guys, I think we were both going into a playoff matchup. You guys had nothing to play for. We did. And you guys beat us in that regard and knocked us out of the playoffs. So I'm not, you know, I'm, if I follow, I'm not a Chiefs fan. I don't have that utmost bulletproof confidence. I'm kind of on the fence, but hopefully we can do a little bit better there, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at.
It's a tough situation. Yeah. I look at that game. We talk about maybe Philadelphia is going to be resting their players. You know, Adam on my show brings this up all the time. He says, are we confident that the Giants can beat the backups of the Philadelphia Eagles in that game? Like, I don't even know based on how many injuries we've had and where our season is at currently. So I see a path for the Giants to be able to make the playoffs. Obviously it feels, to me personally, it feels a little tougher than the Commanders' path to be able to make it. Knowing that the Commanders were able to get that tie, you know, on the road against the Giants, that really sets it up to win this game at home and be able to just look ahead and say, give us one more win on the schedule.
Exactly. So let's kind of talk about the game strategy, kind of going into the game really quickly. So I'll pull this from PFF. We're looking at, you know, power ranking on offense, power ranking on defense, strength of schedule played, and the distribution of the run pass, right? So I kind of see some parallels with Washington and New York. They basically run the ball about 40% of the time, pass the ball 60% of the time as well. I guess I just want to get a little pulse for you in regard to the Giants offense moving forward. You kind of touched on the fact that their wide receivers are struggling and, you know, not struggling, but like it's been a injury prone all year long. Right. And Kenny Galladay hasn't really contributed much at all. So
what's you're being kind, George, about Kenny Galladay. You're being very kind to me right now. Thank you.
Yeah. I was talking about, I guess last week I had my preview for that game. I guess he's only had one multiple catch game all season long. Is that true or something along that regard?
Yeah. I mean, Kenny Galladay is an enigma wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a question mark.
It's crazy.
With the Giants, you know, you remember how explosive and able to high point the ball when he was with the Detroit Lions, and all of that has been zapped away. He's obviously had injuries with the Giants. He got his guaranteed money. It's been a struggle to get him on the field in situations. And you know, the reason why specifically with Kenny Galladay, why he hasn't gotten that much playing time is he can't get the separation needed fast enough in order to be effective out there. And you know, we'll talk a little bit about the offensive strategy, but the Giants offensive line is not one of their strengths. It's still one of the worst in the league, especially on the interior. And so when this pass rush comes quickly, you need wide receivers that can either, you know, have short, quick hitch routes or be able to get open quickly. Kenny Galladay's skill set just does not work with what the Giants are trying to do and how they're currently constructed on offense.
Gotcha. Is it assumed he's not going to be in New York next year, right? How's his contract look and how does that all break down for you?
Yeah, so as you can tell, Giant fans are not too pleased with Kenny Galladay. And the Giants will save about $6 million against the cap cutting him next year. They can save even more money if he's a post-June 1st injury release designation. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know if the Giants want to push that much money down the road, knowing that they are second or third in the most cap space next season. You may as well absorb it.
Exactly. Kind of hide a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, everyone, including Kenny Galladay, doesn't believe that he will be here next year.
Gotcha. Interesting. It makes a lot of sense, though. So let's talk about this, right? So I guess the offensive strategy, and tell me if I'm wrong, I'll kind of throw it out there and kind of nitpick it if you don't mind. So what I envision with the New York Giants is they want to rely on Saquon Barkley. He is the engine behind the whole offense, right? Whether it's running or receiving at the backfield. I guess it's timely, effective passes with Daniel Jones and potentially kind of scrambling and maybe incorporating some sort of run-pass combination with that Daniel Jones. I know Bellinger, your tight end, you know, coming from San Diego State, or was it North Dakota State? Excuse me.
San Diego State. You got it. Yep.
Well, okay. San Diego State. Okay. So I believe, you know, maybe incorporating him. I heard he's a reliable target, but he has been injured, you know, for much of the year. And then I guess Hodgins had a pretty big game against Washington last time, if I remember correctly, and Darius Slayton. So that's kind of the offensive perspective here. But, you know, break it down. Am I on the right path or how would you break it down further?
Yeah, you are. You mentioned Isaiah Hodgins. He caught a touchdown pass against the Commanders, caught another touchdown pass last week. He was a guy that was sitting on the Buffalo practice squad for a while. You know, our GM, Joe Shane, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, was the assistant GM there. So as you can tell, there's probably a theme of a lot of Buffalo players on the practice squad or that were free agents at some point coming over to the Giants. Isaiah Hodgins is one where we think we may have found a receiver that can be here longer term, which is great. But you hit it almost out of the park in terms of the game plan for the Giants. Obviously, we have to get Saquon Barkley going. Earlier in the season, he was averaging over 5 yards a carry. He was looking great. recently he's dropped down to almost under 3 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with the inefficiencies on the offensive line. It has to do with game script because the Giants have been behind in a lot of these games. But ultimately, it's the combination of Saquon Barkley running the ball and Daniel Jones running the ball.
Yeah.
Giant fans say, hey, I don't want to get Daniel Jones hurt. I don't want to put him in these situations. But the only way the Giant offense actually can manufacture points and gets down the field is if he uses those legs as a weapon, which he has all year. He's already broken the record for most rushing yards by a quarterback in Giants history in a season.
It's crazy.
And he still has 4 games to go. The offense is going to be predicated on being able to move the ball through Jones and Barkley on the ground and being able to catch one or two of those play action plays to get Isaiah Hodgins or Darius Slayton open down the field.
Isn't it crazy for all the criticism Daniel Jones gets? He's probably the second best offensive player on the team, right? I feel like is that fair to say? I feel like he's pretty talented. I don't know how consistent he is, but he does have that high upside. And I guess we can kind of transition to that as well. We'll talk about our quarterbacks, but what's the perception in New York about Daniel Jones and how do you feel about him?
Oh, I mean, talk about the most talked about, most divided the fan base is. It's all about Daniel Jones. And for me, my co-host, Adam Armbrecht, is more on the side of maybe the grass is greener. Perhaps, you know, Joe Shane wants to go get his own quarterback in the draft next season. I'm mm-hmm. more of the mindset of if we could just get Daniel Jones a healthy offensive line and maybe just like one or two weapons on the outside that isn't practice squad guys, we would be able to see what he truly has available. And it's a very divisive discussion. I don't necessarily know the talk of the town is, will Daniel Jones be back next season? And everyone has their different ideas on what they have. Yeah. I honestly think he's played well when he's been able to use his legs effectively. The Giants are winning games. He's 14th in the league in QBR, which to me is kind
solid.
Of
where middle of the pack. Yeah.
Yeah. Like very respectable. Anywhere between 10 and 20 is, I think, where Daniel Jones can sit when he plays well. I think the fascinating thing for me, George, is I look at Taylor Heinicke and you look at all of the stats. You know, he has low 60s completion percentage. He doesn't have a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. But everyone on the team rallies around him and he wants to play hard. He's a guy that's going to throw the ball. He's going to get knocked down and get back up. What is it about Taylor Heinicke that the team really rallies around?
Are you talking about that's a question? Yeah. So Taylor Heinicke, they love him. He's one of the guys, and I think he is like one of them, right? So obviously when you kind of pick somebody and you have someone that's kind of like through your farm system and kind of grows with the team, you tend to basically love them, right? Wentz was a free agent. He's brought to the team. Wentz has a higher upside in regard to talent maybe, and he's like 6'5", and he has that arm, you know, that arm strength to throw it deep. But he, you know, for all the criticism that Wentz had for not being a great teammate, he actually is a pretty nice, he's a good teammate. He invited everyone over for Thanksgiving. He's very kind and supports his players. But Heinicke basically is one of the guys. You can see him. He's always joking. He's basically hanging out with everybody. You know, he's playing music, kind of dancing with people in the locker room. They like the upside that he has of him as being like the underdog. You know, everyone knows the story now. He basically was sleeping on his sister's couch. He was counted out of the league. He came, you know, played his butt off in the playoffs against Tom Brady, held his own there. And then last year, you know, he wasn't even supposed to play. He played 16 out of 17 games and basically had them like on the cusp of the playoffs last year. I think his personality definitely rises to the occasion. I think the fact that he is clutch, he actually is. It's funny. Is that like a Aaron Rodgers clutch? But he's clutch for who he is, right? He comes in, he'll bring the team back. He's not scared. The leaders of the team actually love him as well. Like Chase Young loves Taylor Heinicke. He also has a great relationship with Terry McLaurin as well. So let's give you some context for the Giant fan listeners. So Terry McLaurin basically did not practice throughout the summer because he's trying to get a larger contract. He was kind of, you know, respectfully sitting out. What ended up happening was Jahan Dotson from Penn State was our primary target over the summertime, and Carson Wentz developed a relationship with him. Over the first 6 games of the year, there were times where Terry McLaurin wouldn't have a target in the first half. And this is our wide receiver one, our $20 million wide receiver, who is supposed to be the face of the franchise, a true captain. He actually is legitimate a captain of the team. Once Taylor Heinicke came in, I think I saw a stat recently, over the first 6 games with Carson Wentz, he was targeted 40 times. And I believe over the last 6 games with Taylor Heinicke, it's 65 times. So, you know, it's almost like a 100, 30% increase with Taylor Heinicke there. And his production has gone up, 100-yard games have gone up. So I think that goes a long way as well. So I just think it's his fire, his energy, the way he communicates with people. I don't know if you caught the stick yet up in New York, but basically whenever he wins a game, he buys Jordans of the team that he beat. Have you heard about, this? That, yeah. So he does that little kind of fun antidote, but at the same time, he's been buying it for the players as well. He bought his offensive line Jordans. He bought the tight end room Jordans. He bought the defensive line Jordans as well. So it's like he's doing his little like added things to kind of build the team together. And I think people just kind of like they gravitate towards him. His personality definitely shines through.
George, what does he do for a tie?
What does he, what does he doesn't do anything. Wise, you know? So people talked about that. People were like, hey, did you get any shoes for the tie? And he said no. So he didn't go that direction with it. But, you know, it's a pretty cool shtick. And it's like, you know, good for him. Like, you know, he's living his best life. To give you more context, the way it works for him is he has a pretty, like, minuscule contract. You know, minuscule for NFL standards. I believe it's like $2 to $3 million. But every time he wins, he gets another $125K. So that's why it's, you know, it feels pretty good. You can spend $200 on some Jordans when you get another $125K every time. So that's kind of the belief behind him.
I love it.
Cool. And let me say hi to my guy, Scott, all the way from the UK. What's up, buddy? Good to see you, man. Thank you for dialing in, man. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Scott's good people. Cool. So I guess, yeah, before we pivot, so Daniel Jones, I guess you said you were kind of willing to kind of hang with him and give him a another year, as long as he has a better supporting cast and supporting offensive line. Is that what you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's shown enough where, you know, over the first couple of years of his career, they talked about how he was so turnover prone and he fumbled the ball constantly. And now, you know, this year he's tied for fourth in the league. I think he has three interceptions or four interceptions. Mm-hmm. One of them was a Hail Mary at the end of the half. But he's protected the football significantly better this season, which was the big knock. Now everyone's asking him, he's got to take the shot deep downfield. He's got to take the shot downfield, which feels kind of flying in the face of him being a little bit more conservative. He's second in the league in pressure rate against. Justin Herbert's number one. Justin Fields has been up there, and Daniel Jones, and all three of those guys. Basically, people say that they're running for their lives almost on every snap. I just feel like if you give him a little bit more time, you'd see the best version of Daniel Jones. Now, I don't necessarily know how high that can be. Can it be a top 10 quarterback in the league? I don't know, but I know right now he's 14th, and he's been doing things in spite of limited wide receiver and offensive line play.
Gotcha. And if you know, for everyone listening, for everyone watching, this is our breakdown of last week's Commanders play the Giants. Daniel Jones had 200 yards passing, 31 attempts. He had one touchdown, four sacks. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. And he had 71 yards rushing. So that's definitely, that's where he got us. One of our content creators, Mark Bullock, had a really good article about Daniel Jones about how his called runs and his planned, like, you know, RPOs weren't necessarily effective against Washington, but he thrived at basically scrambling and creating on his own. That's kind of what he did against us. So, you know, averaging 5.9 yards carry is huge. I guess before we move on to the defense, one last question. So, you know, Taylor Heinicke is polarizing here in D.C. It sounds like Daniel Jones as well. Has there been any talk of like who Giant fans want potentially next year to be on the team? Or is there like, is it a potential draft pick? Is it a free agent? I'm just kind of curious about that.
It goes any which way you could possibly imagine. I think because the Giants are winning, but they're not looking great offensively, and Daniel Jones has good games, and then he has head scratching games where he only has 120 yards passing. It is a city divided on what should happen with Daniel Jones. I think if the way that I think I see it is, if Daniel Jones can find a way to will this team into the playoffs, if it would feel only right if the Giants can find a way to bring him back and at least build upon what they've done. You know, keep in mind, he's had four offensive coordinators in the 4 years that he's been with the Giants. It would be great to see him have some continuity and consistency and see if we can build on what we've already started here with Joe Shane and Brian Daboll.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you guys are on the upswing. Honestly, I think the whole fact that you guys went the whole Buffalo route in regard to the front office, like, you guys are definitely on the upswing as well. And it's, I think, honestly, you guys are kind of regressing back to the mean, to be truthful, but I also feel like you guys are a year ahead of schedule, which is actually pretty awesome. So you guys are doing pretty well over here. Let me take a look. I got a couple of shout outs in the chat. One, well, I can see One Giant Podcast. What is that insanely smart, knowledgeable Giants content creator you have on? So I believe that's Adam giving you a little shout out over there.
Love it. Thanks, Adam. Great.
Let me take a look at this right here as well. Scott, I'll be honest, using the Giants is to be respectful of two franchises with similar build teams. What Dabble has done is very admirable, so I can see that, Scott. Let's talk about the defense, right? So, honestly, Wink Martindale had a really good strategy against Washington. He creates a lot of pressure, and I think our offensive line isn't suited to basically protect, a lot of blitzes as well. And I think Wink Martindale basically bullied Washington in certain aspects last time. One thing that vividly stands out to me was in the overtime period where we basically misread our protection, and Thibodeau came in, smashed Heineke, and he almost fumbled it in the end zone to kind of lose the game. Do you think – so first of all, we'll talk about defense. How do you feel? Do you feel like are you pretty confident in the defense against Washington's offense, and what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, so I am not feeling very confident in the Giants' defense.
Interesting.
Early on in the year, it felt like when everyone was healthy that guys like Xavier McKinney and Adoree Jackson were able to make some big-time plays. Julian Love had a massive interception against the Ravens to basically seal that game for the Giants. It felt like the defense was leading the charge and the offense needed to keep up with them. But injuries have really hurt this defense, and we're missing two of our inside linebackers. We're missing our best cornerback. We're missing two other cornerbacks. We're missing our star safety. It has just been a very difficult challenge. Obviously, we mentioned before Leonard Williams hasn't been in the lineup with a neck injury. The Giants struggle to stop the run. They have not been great at it all season, but they've been better when Leonard Williams has been out there. But the Giants gave up 253 yards on the ground to the Eagles last game, which just gives, we had no chance in that game, no matter how you dice and splice it. If you're giving up, over five, the Giants are giving up 5.4 yards per carry, which is 31st in the league. Like, if you can't stop them on first and second down, you're letting the offense of the other team dictate what they want to do. They can do play action. They can run the ball. They can throw, a quick screen. They can do anything they want. If you're not making these teams one-dimensional, then you're going to run into these problems. And that's been the Giants' problem so far, is they can't get off the field because they can't stop the run.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a close game. Honestly, I'm trying to think about whether Washington really dominated on the run last week, but I don't really think they did. I think it was kind of a pretty competitive game altogether. So it'll be interesting. So keys of the game, I guess. So let's talk about this. Do you think, knowing the Giants staff, knowing kind of what you know now, do you think do you think New York will approach the game in the same kind of perspective? And what strategy would you recommend for Washington? Sir, what's the key to victory in regard to New York?
Yeah, so for the Giants, it's first to 20 wins. I think so too. The Giants need this to be a low-scoring game in order to win. As you've seen before, the Giants haven't scored 30 points in a game in over a year and a half. It's been quite a while. So the challenge has always been manufacturing points. And when you have limited weapons offensively, whatever people think of Daniel Jones, the offensive line and the wide receiving core, it's a challenge finding ways to score points. And that's why it was discouraging for the Giants against the Commanders last time they played, when the Giants have the lead in the fourth quarter with under 4 minutes to go, and they give up that lead and they end up tying 20-20. It felt like that was the opportunity for the Giants to be able to win. So for me, the key to the game is obviously keep the scoring low, hope that the coaching and execution is the thing that ends up bringing the Giants to victory like it did earlier in the season, and just get the defense off the field. The Giants have to be able to stop the run effectively to be able to give the offense more opportunities to get back on the field. And George, I think one of the interesting things that no one ever thinks about is, if the run is also effective, it impacts field position too.
It does.
The Giants are not getting the ball at midfield and then, being able to manufacture easy points. They're getting it deep in their own end zone, and you're asking an offense that's already struggling to go 80 yards instead of 60 yards or 50 yards. It's become a challenge for the Giants, but to me, stop the run, keep the game low scoring, and hopefully your execution and coaching is the thing that separates you.
That's so funny. Mirror images of each other. I think Washington wants to do the exact same thing. I think we want to generate a nice pass. We want to basically run the ball, dictate the time possession with an additional time. I think it benefits our defensive line because we want to basically rest them. Our defensive line is strong, but not necessarily very deep. Jonathan Allen, Deron Payne, they're getting after the quarterback. I think we kind of view that as a plus matchup with our D line versus your O line. So we would definitely want to kind of push the issue there. In regard to our strategy, I think Washington, a big name for what for Giant fans to keep an eye on is Benjamin St. Juice, who's one of our starting cornerbacks. He missed the last matchup. He had a mid-ankle sprain, which basically had a 4 to 6 week time period to be out. And actually, he's been limited practices this week. Him and Montez Sweat, who has a concussion, he's in concussion protocol right now, are the kind of the big swings in whether they're going to play against New York. The way it's projecting, where we're kind of hearing with the rumors, is that Montez Sweat's going to play. He was limited in practice, and he has a concussion. He's limited practicing. Yeah, I think it's kind of on the right. You know, you're projecting up. Yeah. And then Benjamin St. Juice, if he plays, I think Washington will primarily play man coverage. Like, you know, our two major schemes for Washington is man coverage or match cover threes, what we like to do in Washington, right? So I think with BSJ back, you know, he'd cover your wide receivers. We have our linebackers can cover, you know, Kendall Fuller can cover, you know, your wide receiver too. And that would unleash our getting upfield in regard to our pass rush. So that's kind of the ideal game plan there.
A big question from Giant fans is whether Chase Young is going to play in this game. Obviously, they've been easing him back in. Giant fans think about Chase Young constantly, considering we didn't win the Chase Young sweepstakes when it came.
I remember that. Yeah,
we got very fortunate in being able to get Andrew Thomas as a consolation prize, who's turning into a very good left tackle. But what's the status of Chase Young? He's obviously a game wrecker, but you know the interior of that defensive front for the Commanders has been unbelievable. And do you want to mess up what's been going on by introducing him in a game like this?
100%. So actually, I don't know if you saw that on my feed. I actually put a poll up and actually got a lot of traction in regard to whether he should be playing or not. Before I answer the question, let me ask you, I want to get your perspective though. What is the New York perspective on talk radio, your perspective, so on and so forth? What's the New York perspective on Chase Young? Do you guys view him as a big threat still? Do you guys consider him more of like a potential bust because he hasn't been playing? Like, I have no idea where you guys stand. I'm just kind of curious about this.
Yeah, I think the simple answer is absolutely tremendous talent. Needs to stay healthy on the field to be able to see it. Like it's just, we haven't seen it in so long. Obviously he's had a bunch of injuries that have kind of kept him out for quite a while at this point. So you almost forget where he's been. You know, 100%. a lot of Giants reporters and other people have actually compared, you know, we took Azeez Ojulari in the second round. He's one of our pass rushers that we have. It's interesting because his numbers and Chase Young's numbers are very close because Chase Young has missed a bunch of games that, you know, for us, it's just, we kind of hope that he sits out of this game because we know what he's capable of when healthy, but we just haven't been able to see it as consistently as I'm sure Commander fans would have liked as well.
Yeah, 100%. So to answer your question, it's an enigma, right? So it's been kind of like the running joke in DC because every single week Chase Young is projected to play. Like we hear that every single week. It's been going on since he was activated from IR on November 1st, right? So it's been going on for a good 4, 5, 6 weeks now. So potentially he could have played. If you kind of read the tea leaves, and kind of read all the beat reporters, the narrative is that Chase Young is structurally sound. Like his knee actually feels good. It should be perfectly fine now. However, there's a lack of confidence and there's a lack of like football moves and repetition where he feels 100% confident to be slamming into a 300-pound guy and kind of shifting him off and being in run support. That's kind of the concern there. What I interpret, this is not, you know, fact, this is not preaching. I interpret that he might be a little bit nervous because he hasn't done it. And it's kind of hard to just jump into a mainstream game, a potential playoff game and kind of getting out there to play. But at the same time, he's an elite athlete. And I think if he starts playing, he'll kind of shake off those spiderwebs pretty quickly and kind of pick up the pace. Big picture, I'll talk about his actual injury. Then I'll talk about like whether his impact, you know, what his impact would be. So big picture, Chase Young tore his ACL, and what ended up happening is he had full reconstructive knee surgery. He dipped into his left patella tendon to basically the muscle graft to basically rebuild his ACL. And the larger issue is that his ACL is actually pretty healthy now, but his patella tendon is kind of like, that's where the bigger concern is. So people are kind of like starting to get that now. In regard to him playing, I do think he is the best athlete. And him and Jamin Davis actually are probably the best two in Montez Sweat are great athletes on the defensive line, defensive back, you know, defensive side of the ball altogether. I think he can create that, like that fumble, you know, forced fumble, that major sack that we're looking for. If he did play, he would play 10 to 15 reps. He's not going to get a heavy dosage of, actual snap counts. It would probably be more like in pass rush situations. The concern with Chase Young, you know, I posted this and we talked about it all ad nauseum on DC Radio, is basically he was known for being a freelancer last year. Like he trained with Von Miller, trained with some, you know, potential high end elite pass rushers. And they were kind of like, you know, go get yours, go get the quarterback, you know, get those high end sack numbers. And he would basically leave open gap responsibilities and have poor gap integrity. Mm-hmm. And that would basically weaken his huge rushing lanes. It wouldn't be very good. Right. We have lesser athletic talents like Casey Tuhill and James Smith Williams that are there instead of him right now, but they're playing sound ball and they're playing a consistent, like continuous defense that's actually doing pretty well. So I am a little bit nervous about putting him back in the mix because we have good chemistry. So I don't necessarily want to break that up, but at the same time, you know, it's potentially a playoff game. Give him a couple plays, get out there. If he's playing pretty good, you want your best people out there. So that's kind of the hope, and we'll see what ends up happening. So to answer your question, I don't know. Like every single day that reporters ask, you know, Ron Rivera whether he's going to play, he plays, you know, he plays very coy. Ron Rivera has a kind of a prickly relationship with our media around here. I don't know how it is with Dabble up there in New York, but like, you know, he won't give them too much. And I think he's also doing it intentionally to not tip his hand to the New York Giants as well. So it's kind of a
good sure. Question. It makes sense. And knowing Allen and Payne in the first matchup were very effective against the interior offensive line of the Giants, you were getting pressure up front, which is even better than off the edge.
It is
because you're right into the quarterback's face. You're almost wondering if, you know, gap responsibilities are an issue. You know, that's where Saquon Barkley would take a little bit of a running lane, and he can take, you know, a 5 yard gain into a 50 yard gain and score for a touchdown. So it's a tough situation for the Commanders. You want to bring him back. You want that talent on the field. But that defensive front is playing so well right now. You almost wonder if they ease him back in slowly but surely.
It is. And Daron Payne, he is a potential free agent next year. He's playing into a $20 million contract. We don't want to lose him. Like I think honestly, like big picture wise, maybe we can reconnect in the offseason, have an offseason podcast between you and I. Basically, I think the big picture is that we're going to release Carson Wentz or maybe try to restructure him because he's a $26 million cap hit next year. And if we basically let him go, all that, like there's no dead cap money the way his contract's structured. Oh, so wow. That could potentially all go on to Daron Payne. So I think Daron Payne's the focus moving forward. So we see that there. Before we get into predictions, Andy, do you have any more questions for me in regard to the Commanders or big picture things or? What do you got?
No, I mean, you answered the Taylor Heinicke thing and the Chase Young. Obviously, those are the two big names that I keep thinking about. It's like, man, if you just look at the stat lines on Taylor Heinicke, you'd be like, this guy shouldn't be a starting NFL quarterback. But when you take all the intangibles in it and the team rallying around him and his aggressiveness and like willingness to do whatever it takes to win, that's why some of these things don't show up on the stat sheet. And so, you know, hearing that feedback from you just makes us understand more of like why Taylor Heinicke is playing when you know Carson Wentz has a little bit more of an upside.
And to give you more context, you seem like you like definitely are interested in this. So like he was on Carolina's staff with Scott Turner before he came over to Washington. I don't know if you know that at all. Scott Turner was even in Minnesota at one point with Taylor Heinicke as well, but he definitely was in Carolina, came over to Washington. There's some familiarity there. I think what it comes down to is our offensive line is so beat down. Our offensive line cannot pass block. We need someone who has some shiftiness, which is Heinicke. We need someone that's knowledgeable of the offense. So Heinicke basically knows the first and second read pretty quickly. He also throws with anticipation. So I think Carson Wentz coming over, he even said it in interviews, he's felt uncomfortable learning Washington's offense. So it would be like a tick slow and a beat slow in regard to dropping back, which would lead to more sacks. So I think what ends up happening is our defense is pretty damn good. I think our run game is pretty solid. We only need a quarterback that's efficient, that won't turn the ball over, and that won't give us negative plays. And I think Heinicke offers that. I think ultimately next year, Washington's going to pursue and try to get a better quarterback to resolve the issue long term. But I think here in the now, basically, I think Heineke's working right there. So let me see.
Makes sense.
And then, yeah, just kind of bring it on home, I guess. So real quick, if you don't mind. So I don't know if you feel comfortable doing this. People don't. Like, how do you feel about the game? Like, in regard to the game prediction, do you think who's going to win, potential scores? How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, so good question. So it's a tough one for Giant fans because we are so injury riddled and we're not necessarily sure if we're going to get Leonard Williams back. And this is a big game on Sunday night. I do think that this is going to be a relatively low scoring game. I think the Giants getting a little bit embarrassed by the Philadelphia Eagles is probably a good motivation where
I was wondering about coordinator that.
Wink Martindale will turn around and say, you just got embarrassed by that team. You cannot do it again on Sunday night. adds a little bit of that extra motivation in. I think this is going to be a low scoring game. I think points are going to be at a premium. Like I said, I think the first team to 20 is going to win the game if either team gets to 20. and I kind of think if it's a coin flip. Ultimately, knowing that Washington has had almost 3 weeks to prepare for the Giants, it feels like they do have a strong advantage. I looked at the injury report. There was not a single person for Washington that did not participate today, which is huge for them, knowing they're healthy. They're coming off a bye. They get the scheme for the Giants, who was their last opponent. So for me, I think those are the big differences. I've got the final score, 20 for the Commanders and 13 for the Giants.
Interesting. Okay, I got something pretty similar. Let me give a little quick shout out to Roger Smith. Thank you for being in the chat. I should have advertised better, Roger. Thank you for being on here. What Roger said is basically, like I said, since day one, this is a running team, and if Scott gets pass happy, we will lose. If we run 40 to 50 times, we will win the game. So, yeah, Andy, I'm in the same ballpark as you. Like, I'm not trying to be arrogant, kind of, you know, it's a Washington podcast or anything like that. I think the health is definitely a big differentiator right here. I think Washington is getting healthy with the bye. I think New York's kind of getting more injured as time goes on. I do think the added week for preparation is going to maybe tip the hat to Washington as well. I have 24-17. Like, it's funny, I don't see us breaking 20 either, but for some reason or another, I just feel like Sunday football, some crazy stuff's going to happen. So I just kind of see some potential fireworks, hopefully. So that'd
expect
be great.
The unexpected Sunday night football, right? Who knows?
100%, man. 100%. And even an excellent guest, man. Very knowledgeable, very laid back. I really appreciate you. Can you tell our listeners and your listeners, I guess, where they can find you on social media and what products you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So I host the One Giant podcast with my co-host, Adam Armbrecht. He also does the Locked On Nets for the Nets podcast. But yeah, you can find us on wherever you get your social media and podcasting needs fulfilled.
Put it up there real quick.
Twitter, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, you name it. That's all of us. The One Giant podcast, everything, all things Giants related. We do it 5 days a week. We try to go live in the mornings. If we're schedule conflicts, we'll end up recording and putting something out. But we really appreciate being able to come on here, George. Obviously, this has been great, and it's going to be an exciting matchup coming up on Sunday night.
100%, man. Andy, I definitely appreciate you coming on. We definitely got to link up again in the offseason, kind of talk about some upcoming things. For those of you that actually paid attention and watched the video and are listening right now live, thank you for that. I'm George Carmi from FullPressCoverage.com. You guys can find me on Twitter. You guys can find me on YouTube as well and all audio platforms. I appreciate you guys listening, and have a great weekend. Enjoy the game. Peace out, everybody.